I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, closing arguments. Lawmakers scramble to find a solution as a government shutdown draws closer. We have the latest. Surprising data. New numbers reveal how many people have been deported in the last year under the Biden administration. Vatican visit. A closer look at the meeting next month between Pope Francis and the president. Plus, Christmas presents, a preview of the Holy Father's busy schedule for the Yuletide season. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. I'm Montse Alvarado in for Tracy Sable. It looks like the third time might be the charm for government funding. After a closed-door meeting this afternoon, House Republican leaders announced a plan that they hope will make it a Merry Christmas for members. Correspondent Mark Irons joins us in studio with more details. Mark, what can you tell us?
Montse, just a few minutes ago, after nearly a week of bickering and finger-pointing, the House finally passed a bill keeping the government open until mid-March. It also provides billions of dollars in aid to farmers and hurricane disaster victims, left out raising the debt ceiling for 2 years demanded by President-elect Donald Trump. Before the vote, House Speaker Mike Johnson said he was confident it would pass.
We will not have a government shutdown, and we will meet our obligations for our farmers who need aid, for the disaster victims all over the country, and for making sure that military and essential services and everyone who relies upon the federal government for a paycheck is paid over the holidays.
House Agriculture Committee Chair Congressman G.T. Thompson says farmers need help now.
There are farmers and ranchers being turned down for access to credit right now as we stand here, which means they're not going to farm next year. And you lose your farm or ranch, there's not a lot of people standing in line to come in and farm behind you. And that leads to food insecurity and ultimately national insecurity.
And senators from states affected by recent hurricanes say people are desperate.
We're talking about a possible government shutdown here in Washington. Well, there are parts of this country that have been affected by the storm who are effectively shut down. And until we fund them, they have no hope.
But if this is not an emergency under federal law, what would be? If this doesn't qualify as an emergency, nothing will ever qualify for emergency.
But Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is pushing for the original bipartisan deal unveiled at the beginning of the week.
It's the quickest, simplest, and easiest way we can make sure the government stays open while delivering critical emergency aid to the American people. If the House put our original agreement on the floor today, it would pass. And we could put the threat of a shutdown behind us.
The continuing resolution now goes to the Senate, which is expected to act quickly to pass it before midnight. And that will be the last major bill of the 118th Congress as members head home for Christmas. Montse.
Thank you so much. The White House reveals President Joe Biden and Pope Francis plan to meet next month. Their fourth meeting comes as the Jubilee year begins, and it likely marks the president's last international trip before he leaves office. After EWTN News tried to question President Joe Biden last night,
Mr. President, are you going to see the Pope next month? Are you going to visit Pope Francis next month?
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre confirmed President Biden and Pope Francis will meet each other on Friday, January 10th. Adding, President Biden will have an audience with the Pope and discuss efforts to advance peace around the world.
And he's met, obviously, a couple times in this administration alone with His Holiness Pope Francis, and obviously he looks forward to that. As you know, he is a proud Catholic, and so that is something that he certainly was looking forward to. That.
President Biden and the Holy Father also held a call yesterday. The White House says the president thanked the Pope for his continued advocacy to alleviate global suffering, including his work to advance human rights and protect religious freedoms. The two leaders last met face-to-face in June at the G7 summit in Italy. At the time, they talked about the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, among other topics. While he's overseas next month, President Biden will also visit with Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and President Sergio Mattarella to highlight the strength of the U.S.-Italy relationship and discuss important challenges facing the world.
Let's not forget, the prime minister she's the leader of the G7 right now, right, and has shown strong leadership. So that's important too, to have for him to have that continue that diplomatic conversations with her as well.
And here to discuss this further is Peter Laffin, staff writer for the National Catholic Register. Peter, it's great to see you. We know that President Biden and the Holy Father will be discussing efforts to advance peace. Tell us, what do you make of this upcoming meeting, and why is this happening now?
But anytime the two most prominent Catholics on earth get together, it's significant. And for Biden, who has often emphasized his Catholic faith, a visit with the Pope seems to be a fitting way to end his 50-plus year career in public service. For the Pope, who's famously taught that the death sentence is incompatible with Catholicism, there are about 40 federal death row inmates right now, and it seems he's going to attempt to convince President Biden to commute their sentences. And also, as you mentioned, there will be talks about world peace. Whether this has something to do with Biden's post-presidency or the war in Ukraine, where there appears to be some daylight between Biden and the Vatican, that remains to be seen.
This is the latest in several meetings the two leaders have had throughout the Biden presidency, in addition to a number of phone calls. And we also know that the two have known each other going back to Biden's time as vice president. What would you say the relationship is like between the two? We know there has been some fraternal correction on the part of the Holy Father.
There has been, but all indications are that it's been a warm relationship. We know that from their meeting in 2021 in particular, that they had extended and highly personal talks, which is how it was reported. A very warm conversation that touched on topics from the president's son, Hunter, jokes about aging. And if we remember, that's the meeting from which Biden emerged saying that Francis called him a quote-unquote good Catholic who can continue to receive communion. There are areas of significant agreement between Francis and Biden on immigration, on the environment, on health care. And so it seems that their relationship, you know, despite the fraternal correction you mentioned, has been very warm over the years.
Well, the president and Pope Francis are scheduled to meet on January 10th, just 10 days before Biden leaves office. How significant is it for a president to take an overseas trip this late in his presidency?
It's hard to say exactly what can be done here. Talk about Ukraine, for instance, where there seems to be some daylight between Francis and Biden. Biden's behaviors have seemed to be escalatory. Anti-personnel landmines, permission to fire long-range missiles into the heart of Ukraine. Those are positions that the Vatican seems to disagree with. Their meeting's going to be on January 10th, and that's just 10 days before Biden leaves office. So it's hard to say exactly what are we going to be able to accomplish. However, if Pope Francis thinks that if we can get Biden to stop doing those escalatory behaviors for 10 days, you know, especially involving a war with a nuclear power such as Russia, then, you know, that might very well be worth it.
Well, quickly, I do want to get your thoughts on what the dynamic would look like when once President-elect Trump takes office. What kind of relationship did he and Pope Francis have in the first term? What might that look like now in the second term?
Well, as we know, there couldn't possibly be two characters who are more diametrically opposed in both style and substance. Donald Trump, obviously, famously, everything is golden framed, private jet. And Pope Francis is just the opposite, very humble living quarters, very humble car. And there's also some policy areas of significant disagreement between the two. Pope Francis's advocacy for climate change, migration, obviously, Pope Francis has put at the front of his pontificate. Donald Trump, just the opposite. Donald Trump is regularly says drill, baby, drill, and has built his entire political identity around immigration reform, border security. And now that President Trump appears to be weakening on abortion, it seems like that was the last thing that they had in common. And now it very much appears that President Trump will be one of the most abortion-friendly Republican presidents since Gerald Ford. And so it's hard to say exactly where they're going to overlap with agreement. But as we know, with both the president and this pope, anything's possible, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. Thank you so much, Peter.
Oh, you're welcome.
The United States deported its highest number of migrants in a decade over the last fiscal year. A new report released by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement found that the agency deported more than 270,000 to more than 200 countries last fiscal year. This marks a higher one-year deportation peak than at any point during the Trump administration. The report also says that November was the lowest one-month total of encounters along the southern border since President Biden took office. At least two people are dead and dozens injured after a car drives into Christmas market in Germany. Police are calling it an attack. This was the scene in Madenburg in the northern part of the country. Police say the car plowed through a narrow alleyway filled with people and kiosks. The driver has been arrested, but no motive is known. In 2016, a similar attack happened in Berlin, killing 12. ISIS later claimed responsibility. Now to the war in Ukraine, where at least one person is dead and a dozen are injured after a Russian ballistic missile hit the country's capital. Moscow said the strike was in response to a Ukrainian attack on Russia using American weapons. Hundreds of residential buildings, medical facilities, and schools were impacted. The second oldest Catholic church in Kyiv was also damaged during the missile attack. As you can see, the stained glass windows in the towers of St. Nicholas Church were shattered. The parish is inviting the faithful to help clean the temple and, quote, share the true meaning of Christmas to bring light and hope in the darkest times. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau holds his first meetings with his new cabinet advisors. The move comes amid growing discontent over his leadership, the high cost of living, and rising inflation. Trudeau has led the North American country for nearly a decade. In recent years, he has become widely unpopular. Earlier this week, his finance minister made a sudden decision to resign. And now a rising number of Liberal colleagues are calling on Trudeau to step down. He has served in senior posts in the governments of British Prime Ministers Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. Now, Lord Peter Mandelson will play a key role in American politics. Today, the current British Prime Minister appointed Mandelson to the role of UK ambassador to the U.S. It comes at a crucial time for diplomacy between the two countries. Mandelson has a record of criticizing President-elect Trump, calling him a bully in one interview. Now, in his new role, Mandelson will be the key link between the prime minister and the incoming Trump administration. In Croatia, a town is mourning following a school tragedy. Police say a teenager stabbed a 70-year-old girl to death and injured several more, including a teacher. The interior minister said the attacker is a 19-year-old and a former student of that school. He tried to injure himself, but the police intervened. Authorities declared Saturday a day of mourning and canceled some Christmas festivities. Candidates for the upcoming presidential election also temporarily suspended their campaigns. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including Under Fire. The Pentagon makes a surprise announcement about the number of U.S. troops in Syria. Plus, what Iraq Archbishop Bashar Warda remembers about the assassination attempts against Pope Francis during his 2021 trip to the Middle East. Welcome back. The Pentagon is reporting that more than twice the number of U.S. troops are in Syria than previously disclosed. There are currently 2,000 troops in the country. Before, it was believed that only 900 were present. The Pentagon says they have been there for months to fight the Islamic State group. The increase is not related to the ouster of Bashar al-Assad or a spike in attacks by ISIS. This comes as the U.S. sends diplomats to Syria for the first time since Assad's fall earlier this month. The team is holding talks with the country's new leaders. They also want to find out more about missing American journalist Austin Tice and where he may be. It's the first U.S. team of diplomats to formally visit the country in over a decade. One of the biggest questions that remains unclear is the fate of Christians in Syria and indeed across the Middle East. Archbishop Bashar Warda spoke with EWTN's Tracy Sable about this issue. This is the second part of that interview.
Well, Your Excellency, what are your maybe thoughts and also hopes for the new Trump administration coming into office in January? How do you think that's going to impact the Middle East?
Yeah, we were just, ISIS was still there. Everyone was working to defeat ISIS. They were defeated, and the American administration really looked closely to the issues of minorities. We hope that the promises that's been made about the final settlement and peace in Middle East, where peace built on justice, this would be fulfilled, because everyone is really tired from wars and disputes and immigration and displacements, and that's really, it's too much.
Many Christians, as many as about two-thirds, have left the Middle East, as you know, searching, that is, for stability. Are there any hopes that stability will return to the region in the coming years? I know that you've been praying for that.
I think once we have like a spot here in Kurdistan, where peace and settlement is for all, if this is possible here in Middle East in this spot, means we can do that. We can do that elsewhere. I know, Iraq over the last 2 years, probably we've seen, more stability, even in the south. We've seen that there are even more and more of like building and construction, and that's really great. That's really great, and it's our hope that violence and wars will not come across the borders. And our prayer is to stop any kind of wars, not just in Middle East, but also in Ukraine and elsewhere, because it's time to pray for peace, mm-hmm. because the King of Peace is born among us.
As you know, of course, and his soon-to-be-released autobiography, Pope Francis, he had mentioned two attempts on his life when he visited Iraq back in 2021. You were there during that time. What more do you know about that?
Well, Tracy, if he decided to come and visit Iraq, and especially after ISIS was defeated, I think he has in his mind, or at least he expected all scenarios. And we really are grateful that we have Pope Francis, despite all of these issues. I'm not surprised if these attacks were there, but also we are not surprised that Pope Francis, the beloved Pope Francis, despite all of this, he said, no, I will visit Iraq. We cannot really say more about the mass. That was really moments from heaven for all of us. Everyone was really praying that visit has been really a blessing for all of us.
Yeah, indeed. And before I let you go, Your Excellency, is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience about the people of Iraq?
To wish them all a Merry Christmas, blessed days to come, and praying that peace and stability would be brought to us as a grace and gifts from the King of Peace to us. And of course, congratulate you all for the new president, and hopefully, we will see you soon there.
And we look forward to it. Your Excellency, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you, and God bless you. Always
Merry
a pleasure
Christmas.
To have you on.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Not So Silent Nights, a preview of a busy two-week stretch for the Holy Father, plus a children's book with a heavenly message. We'll explain. Is set at the Vatican for the traditional Christmas celebrations and the start of the Jubilee year. A busy 2 weeks for the Holy Father will start Tuesday on Christmas Eve. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Siedegren has more.
Christmas at the Vatican will truly be a unique experience this year. It all begins on Christmas Eve when the Pope opens the Holy Door in St. Peter's Basilica. This kicks off the 2025 Jubilee year, a time of grace, forgiveness, and spiritual renewal for the Church and the faithful worldwide. Following the tradition, Pope Francis will preside over the Christmas Eve Mass in the Basilica. On the following day, Christmas morning, the Holy Father will give his traditional Urbi et Orbi blessing, which in Latin translates to the city and to the world.
Spiritu Sancti. Descenda super vos et maniat semper.
This is the most solemn form of papal address and apostolic blessing that a pope can give, and is usually reserved for Christmas Day, Easter, and after the proclamation of a newly elected pope. December 26 will mark a significant moment in the history of Jubilee years. On the Feast of St. Stephen, the first Christian martyr, Pope Francis will lead a special angelus, and he will also open the second holy door at the Rebibbia prison in Rome. This extraordinary gesture is a symbol of the closeness and hope for the prisoners, reminding them that they too are part of the journey towards redemption.
Ci farà bene pensare se noi li usiamo spesso nella nostra vita.
On the last day of 2024, the Holy Father will celebrate the first Vespers of the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God, in St. Peter's Basilica. During the liturgy, the Te Deum hymn will be sung, a traditional act of thanksgiving to the Lord for the year that is ending. The following day, on January 1, 2025, Pope Francis will preside over Holy Mass in St. Peter's Basilica for the Solemnity, and after that, the Holy Father will lead the first Angelus prayer of the year at noon.
I magi ci invitano a adorare.
On Monday, January 6, the Holy Father will preside over Holy Mass for the Solemnity of the Epiphany of the Lord, a feast that celebrates the three ways that Christ has made himself known to the world, to the three Magi, at his baptism and at the wedding at Cana. During this period of Christmas celebrations, three more holy doors will be opened at the papal basilicas, but the Vatican has announced that the Pope will not be present. The doors will remain open throughout the whole year for the passage of pilgrims, a transition from sin to grace, which every Christian is called to make. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And finally tonight, a Christmas-themed book aims to teach children about heaven and hope. Christmas in Heaven by Anthony DeStefano is 40 pages long. Written in rhyming verse, it tells the story of a boy who learns a new perspective after the death of his grandmother. It also explores hope and helping children deal with pain and grief. The author recently sat down with Tracy Sable to discuss the book and why he used a Christmas theme.
And the author of that book, Anthony DeStefano, joins us now. Anthony, great to be with you, my friend. So tell us, why did you write this book, and why did you give it a Christmas theme?
You know, I'm always interested in writing books about the true meaning of Christmas. Christmas has obviously been secularized almost beyond recognition. I have written several children's books already about the Nativity. This time, I wanted to try something a little different. So I decided to focus on the fact that Christmas is Jesus's birthday, and that heaven in heaven, there's going to be a huge celebration going on. So in this story, I show a little boy who is sad because his grandmother has died, and it's Christmas time, and he's wondering how she's celebrating Christmas in heaven. And so his grandfather, who's the husband of the woman who has died, sits the boy down on his knee and tries to paint a very consoling picture for him of heaven and the big birthday party that's going on there with all the angels and the saints and, of course, Our Lady and the boy's grandmother, too. So this is a book about the true meaning of Christmas, but it's also an introduction to the angels and the saints, and it's a book about grieving with hope, hope in the resurrection and hope in life everlasting in heaven.
And what do you hope children get from this book?
You know, three things. Number one, the true meaning of heaven. Number two, I want to introduce them at least to this beautiful world of the saints, which is also a glimpse into the doctrine in the church we have of the communion of saints, which says that there's a lot more to this life than just what we see around us, that there's a beautiful spiritual world. And the third thing I like them to get out of this is that heaven is a joyful, wonderful place. You know, Christmas is a magical time of year, but it's also a very sad time of year for many people who have lost loved ones. I like to impress upon children that even if people have died in their lives, you know, Christmas can still be joyful because those loved ones hopefully are in heaven or are on their way to heaven, and someday we will see them again. I tell my atheist friends, the difference between Christians and unbelievers isn't that Christians suffer and grieve any less than them. It's that we suffer and grieve with hope. That's the main message that I'd like to get across to readers.
Yeah, and you mentioned a number of saints in the book. Tell us about some of the saints that you mentioned and why you picked them.
Well, I try to include the most famous saints everyone would recognize, like angels like St. Michael the Archangel, St. Peter, St. Joseph, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Jude, St. Therese, St. Joan of Arc, naturally Our Lady. But I also included some lesser-known saints like St. Honoré, who's the patron saint of baking, because, of course, you need a birthday cake for a birthday party, and St. Cecilia and St. Gregory, because they're the patron saints of music, and you need to have singing at a birthday party. So at the end of the book, I include a simple glossary with a little paragraph for each saint and each angel with a thumbnail illustration next to it, so that children and adults can refer back to the book, and each description tries to capture the essence of who that saint is, what they're known for, and what they're pictured doing in the book.
I love it. What else do you want folks to know about your book, and where can they find it?
You know, I think that it's very easy to talk to children about heaven, and we should do it at a very early age. The subject of heaven, when you think about it, is so simple for children to understand. Heaven is God's home. When people die and those people love God, they go to live in God's home. They just move homes. They go from their home here on earth to God's home in heaven. And that's something all children can understand because they're very familiar with the concept of going over their grandparents' home or their aunt's home or to a different building to go to school. They understand the concept of moving from place to place. So the more we're able to show children how wonderful a place heaven is, the more consolation they'll experience when they're grieving about their loved ones who have gone to that place. And they can get the book everywhere, especially the EWTN catalog and, you know, all Christian and Catholic bookstores and wherever books are sold.
Well, Anthony, congratulations on the book. Thank you for talking with us, and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.